political campaigns have been ratcheting up as it is a day before the general election. Senator Brian Schatz stopped by our studios earlier to talk about what's to come.
We're cautiously optimistic. I think after 2016, a lot of us have gotten out of the prediction business. I just don't know what's going to happen. But it does look good for us to take back the United States House. And a lot of enthusiasm is sort of washing over House districts, and not just in sort of Clinton districts, but a lot of suburbs that are normally Republican and even exurban districts across the country. Steve King is in peril. Lots of the most Republican districts in the country with incumbents are actually having to fight for their political lives. So there's definitely something happening across the country. On the Senate side, because so many of my colleagues are running for re-election in states that Trump won, it's going to be a very, very hard road to take the Senate. And I would be not thrilled, but I would be satisfied if we just sort of held our own, because this is really literally the worst Senate map in a generation.
And I'm intrigued just to hear how many people from Hawaii have flown to the mainland to help out in some of these tricky states.
It's extraordinary. We've been able to work with the Democratic Party and lots of grassroots organizations, labor unions, the Indivisible Group, and they are phone banking for Nevada, phone banking for Arizona at the South Street headquarters of the Democratic Party. We just sent out a bunch of texts over the last 8 to 10 days, and we have 30 people that will be in Montana on Election Day to serve as poll watchers and election observers, because there's sort of a lot of shenanigans going on, especially in terms of Native American Indian country and preventing people from being able to vote. So we have 30 people from Hawaii, or at least affiliated with my office, as volunteers who are going to be in Montana to make sure that everybody's vote is counted. So that's really exciting. And it was just a matter of sending a bunch of texts. A lot of them are already there, but some of them are leaving in the next couple of days. And it's even for Montana, it's a little colder than usual. So it's funny. It's snow is falling already. I've been getting texts with little pictures of snow.
Okay. And I know I did check with the Democratic Party, and they were sending more than a dozen people out there. Texas and Nevada.
Yeah, Nevada is a big one for us, because it's probably our best opportunity to pick up a seat. Jackie Rosen is a great candidate. She came to Hawaii to campaign a little, and we were able to support her. But obviously, the Hawaii Nevada connection is strong with Las Vegas. A lot of former Hawaii residents are there. There's a huge Asian community in Vegas in Clark County. So we're trying to mobilize over there. And obviously, I encourage anybody who knows people in Las Vegas to support the Democrat if they are so inclined.
And so what's at stake here for Hawaii in this election?
Well, for Hawaii, it's about making sure we protect our values and our interests. On the appropriation side, we're confident that we're going to be able to work together on a bipartisan basis, regardless of who controls the House and the Senate, because we've been able to make sure that federal funds continue to flow. But everything that we care about in terms of being decent to each other, in terms of climate change, in terms of Native Hawaiian rights, in terms of civility, in terms of LGBTQ issues, in terms of immigration, everything that we value and cherish is on the ballot. And it occurs to me over the last 2 weeks, you know, I've been kind of monomaniacal about making sure that people finish with a message of anti-corruption and protecting your health care. But there is one more thing, which is that to the extent that Donald Trump is finishing with a message that is nearly explicitly racist, it's worse than the Willie Horton ads that caused people to be shocked and offended, you know, many decades ago. This is really worse than that. And it's coming from the president of the United States. So now it's not about how you feel about the Affordable Care Act or how high you think the, you know, top marginal tax rate should be. This is about who we are as a country and whether we're willing to rebuke and repudiate a political party that is willing to close with a message of essentially, you ought to be afraid of other Americans. Even if you're a Republican, you have to find that closing message to be alarming and abhorrent.
And we've got this thing happening along our borders. He is putting troops out to, in anticipation of this caravan of immigrants that's moving toward Mexico and to the U.S. borders. How are you looking at that?
Well, it's a stunt. I mean, these people are unarmed. They are mostly women and children. They are fleeing violence, and they are 1,000 miles away and moving roughly 18 miles a day on foot. They are not a danger to our country. So the idea that we would mobilize any United States Army soldiers for this purpose is preposterous. And they moved from the idea of 800 soldiers to 5,000 soldiers to 7,500 soldiers to several brigades now, 15,000 soldiers, which is an extraordinary number of troops, boots on the ground, on our southern border to protect us from 1,000 or so people who are seeking asylum. And let's just be clear, the process for seeking asylum does not enable these people to sort of breach our borders. They have to be adjudicated. And a lot of them will not be granted asylum. And those that get asylum will be safe and secure and good members of our society. So, you know, here's where I take some comfort and some solace. The Republicans' main policy objectives were the tax cut, which they were able to enact, and repealing the Affordable Care Act, which they were famously unable to enact because of John McCain's no vote. Neither of those things are their closing message. And so from my perspective, what that demonstrates is that the things that they've done and the things that they want to do are unpopular. And so they're basically closing with, you ought to be afraid of these people who are not Caucasian, who are 1,000 miles away, and who are moving towards our borders at the rate of 15 miles a day on foot. And therefore, what I'm going to do is get 15,000 Army soldiers to turn their guns on them. And I want to be precise with my language. Donald Trump said that his instructions were to the DOD, if they throw a rock, you should take it as though it is a gun. And that is a violation of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That is a violation of civil rights and human rights. And it is, more importantly, a violation of everything that it means to be an American soldier. That would be an unlawful order. And I think we have to expect that President Trump is going to ratchet up the rhetoric and get more and more outrageous over the next 4 or 5 days. So although we want to point that out, we also don't want to be pushed off of our message, which is essentially that there is a corrupt establishment in Washington, D.C., and that there needs to be checks and balances. There needs to be a divided government to provide a check against this president, and that we're going to fight for things that matter to people, like health care and education.
We have heard calls for the president to tone down his rhetoric.
I have given up on the idea that Donald Trump will tone down his rhetoric. I don't think he can be shamed. I think he thinks this works for him. I think this, you know, there's an old saying in politics, which is everybody keeps rerunning their first race until it stops working. So especially if you've never been in politics and you win the highest office in the land, the highest office really on the planet in a certain way, you know, you're going to keep running that play until it stops working. And so the idea that he's going to have some sort of moment of moral clarity, you know, as a result of his wife or his kids or his advisors is just a fantasy. The only thing that will stop this president from conducting himself in this way is if it stops working. And the only way it will stop working is if we beat him.
What were your thoughts when you heard about the shooting at the synagogue?
It was personal. Every time there's a shooting in a church or a school, it shocks the conscience and makes you sad and makes you pause. But obviously, as a Jew, I actually pictured the shooting in a different way, just visually. I imagined it. It's good that we're having a service at Temple Emmanuel, but I think it's more important that this is a collection of people who are Jewish and non-Jewish saying we don't stand for this, that this is not who we are as Americans and also as Hawaii citizens. This is not who America is, and we have to stand against anti-Semitism, racism, white supremacy, Nazism. Right now, the best way to get to a sort of recalibration is that what the Republicans are doing in the closing days of this election has to be rejected. It has to stop working politically, because as long as it works politically, they will keep doing it. And I think that there's always room, including on my, you know, in my own life and in my own rhetoric and on my own Twitter feed, to take a breath and to say, is this exactly what I want to say and how I want to say it? I mean, I did something yesterday, which I won't repeat because I don't want to repeat it, but I had to take it back. I thought about it and I thought, you know what, this is not really what I meant to say or the way I wanted to say it. And so I just took it back. And I think there's always room to evaluate the extent to which we're contributing to a toxic environment. But I don't want to have a false equivalence here. There is a political party led by Donald Trump that is feeding into this racism and toxicity. There is another political party which is totally imperfect and screwed up in lots of ways, but that is not feeding into racism and toxicity. We all have a role to make our country a better place, our community a better place. But in my view, we don't want to equivocate about what's actually happening in the country, which is that Donald Trump in 2018 is tweeting out a pretty much explicitly racist ad as his closing message. Not healthcare, not tax cuts, not deregulation, not anything else, but just be afraid of people who don't look like you. And that, I think, has to be rejected by everybody left, right, and center.
And then I do have to ask, we have been talking with FEMA and HAIMA emergency management personnel, and they have some concern about federal funding, that somehow Hawaii could get shortchanged because of the low numbers that appear on FEMA's worksheets. What can you share about the status of funding?
So we're working very hard with the Appropriations Committee and with FEMA and HUD and Department of Agriculture and others to make sure that those numbers are as robust as possible. And the basic problem is that, especially as it relates, not so much the floods, but especially as it relates to the lava flows, if you have an intact house, FEMA tends to book that as zero loss. But if that intact house is surrounded by lava or adjacent to a lava flow, it's unusable and needs to be written off. So FEMA and HUD have sort of never dealt with this problem before. We're confident that they're going to be able to work through it. We've been in constant conversations with them about finding a new way to account for this, but that's the problem. So the number right now that they're able to book is super low. We are cautiously optimistic that it won't end up super low. And our request will reflect the actual losses, not their sort of technical hiccup right now. And that's, at least at this stage, that's where we feel we are, which is they want to help us, but they've never done this before. And they have to figure out a way to say, if a house is surrounded by, you know, say, 500 square miles of lava and there's no infrastructure, it is officially a loss, even if it still looks fancy. So once we get those booked, those numbers will quickly ratchet up. And we do hope that the supplemental disaster appropriation will be passed in December. So we're working, this is literally my highest priority after the election, is to try to make sure we maximize the number of federal dollars. I don't have a number for you because a lot of it's formula-based. And some of those damage assessments the calculation of the unmet needs are not in yet. But all of the counties and the state and the Appropriations Committee, everybody's in pretty good contact. And we're not in total agreement, but there's not a lot of resistance. And there's almost zero politics. So we feel pretty good.
Okay. All right. And then we'll see what November 6th brings.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, Senator.
Thank you.
On the local election front, Senator Schott says he is against a constitutional convention, fearing the outside money that powerful political action committees may throw into the campaign to try and influence local issues. I'm Catherine Cruz on HPR1.